In 1938, the year before the Second World War began, a relatively unknown singer was performing this song with a highly acclaimed English dance band, led by Bert Ambrose. Little did anyone give a thought at the time, but 12 months later, this singer would burst into every British person's life, not only as a household name, but also as the embodiment of the British spirit during the war. Such was her importance to the nation and to the war effort, one leading politician, believed to be Harold Wilson, was later to say, "It wasn't Winston Churchill who won the war, but the voice of Vera Lynn." And if the accolade of national treasure, in common use so much nowadays, was limited to just one single person, it would have to be bestowed upon Dame Vera Lynn. Cinderella stay in my Vera Margaret Welsh was born and brought up in East Ham, in the east of London. She was the daughter of a plumber, Bertram Welsh, a quiet and undemanding man, yet a man who was very humorous, a great dancer, and who was the master of ceremonies at the East Ham Working Man's Club. Her mother, Annie, had been a dressmaker before starting a family, though she continued to take in private work to help make ends meet. Vera began performing publicly at the age of just 7, singing and dancing at working men's clubs across London. She rehearsed constantly for fear of forgetting the words in public, with her mother doggedly accompanying her on the piano. Annie was determined to put her on the stage. Vera never complained at this ambition, and was soon earning, just at weekends, as much as her father did all week. This certainly helped to pay the household bills. She was also encouraged by her maternal grandmother, whose maiden name, Lynn, she took as her stage name at the age of 11, when she dropped out of school and began touring Britain year-round with a music hall variety show. By 1933, still just 16 years old, she started singing with some of the biggest dance bands of the time, although, as the story goes, she was turned down by Billy Cotton as he did not want the responsibility of a young girl travelling with a bunch of male musicians. As a performer, her appeal was her sweet voice with a hint of vulnerability. She had the unusual and star-like self-effacing quality which quickly got the attention of the British public. She began to get jobs fronting top British society orchestras, playing to genteel groups still barely touched by the new spirit of jazz or even Broadway. Her first broadcast came at the age of 18 in 1935. With a nationally renowned Joe Loss Orchestra singing the lead vocals on the band's latest record, Red Sails in the Sunset. Red sails, the night breeze is blowing, and clouds are hiding the moon. Above, no bright stars are glowing, it means a storm coming soon. Red sails in the sunset, way out on the sea. Oh, carry my loved one home safely to me. 2 years later, she landed the weekly top slot on the radio show Life from Mayfair, which featured the Bert Ambrose Orchestra, a show beloved by Britain's high society, including the Prince of Wales. When war was declared on the 3rd of September 1939, with uncanny timing, Vera Lynn went into a recording studio within days and became the first singer to record a brand new song called We'll Meet Again. It was written by English composers Ross Parker and Hughie Charles, who between them also wrote another wartime hit, There'll Always Be an England. The original recording of this song is of Vera Lynn's vocal, only accompanied by her piano player Arthur Young on a Novachord, an early days synthesizer. This suggests that this recording was made hurriedly and without sufficient financial backing to employ an orchestra. Irrespective, this record was released on the 28th of September, and it caught the mood of the nation at the precise moment when British troops were being called up and were leaving for France to join the British Expeditionary Force. Over the years, we've got to know this song, which was never a war song, but about being apart, starting with a short introduction and then diving into its evocative chorus. However, the original recording in September 1939 had a preamble verse, the lyrics of which had the effect of connecting this song even more strongly with the prevalent sentiments of the time as families faced the call-up of relatives, their imminent departure, the prospect of a long-term absence, and even possible loss.
Let's say goodbye with a smile, dear, just for a while, dear, we must part. Don't let this parting upset you, I'll not forget you, sweetheart. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies chase those dark clouds far away. And I will just say hello to the folks that you know, tell them you won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as I saw you go, you were singing this song. Again, don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
This song became a way for parted lovers to feel they were still together. It's a fragile song with a touch of the tragic that makes the song so haunting. The line, I know we'll meet again, is a promise that no one can keep. As bombs fell, houses crumbled, and people were killed, the words look ahead to a possible brighter future. But the tune behind is laced with doubt. With imperfect hope, the song says, don't know where, don't know when. And exalts the listeners to keep smiling through, just like you always do.
They'll be happy to know that as I saw you go, you were singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
It was hardly surprising that during the phony war, when Britain's most popular paper, the Daily Express, asked British servicemen to vote for their favourite musical performer, Vera Lynn came top, beating Bing Crosby into second place. It was from this poll that she became known as the Force's sweetheart. From now on, Vera Lynn's songs, her public performances, and later her radio broadcasts, would become the soundtrack of Britain in the Second World War.
I haven't said thanks for that lovely weekend. Those 2 days of heaven you helped me to spend. The thrill of your kiss as you stepped off the train. The smile in your eyes like the sun after rain.
The singing style she used for her recordings and her performances was fairly new. She differed from most British singers at that time, who, like her, were more accustomed to singing in front of the big bands of the period. They were often treated as an ancillary part of the band, rather than the leading performer, partially because they had to be careful not to overshadow the band leader. Vera, though, chose a style that was crucially dependent upon one thing, the microphone. Its development now allowed singers to be able to freely express feelings with their voice, using a wider range of different vocal palettes, colours, sounds and nuances. This type of singing became known as crooning. Crooners like Bing Crosby were already popular, but for many in Britain it was considered to be insincere, too American, and in the case of men, too effeminate. In 1935, the Daily Telegraph had run an article under the headline "Crooning Harms Children," which warned against the pernicious effect of this sentimental style of music. One doctor claimed that any parent who allowed their child to listen to crooning might just as well hang their walls with indelicate pictures or line their bookshelves with pornographic literature. What set Vera Lynn apart from other crooners was that while she used the microphone and the crooning style, she kept a clear British diction and a clear lyrical focus that nullified any accusation of American insincerity. As a demonstration of a contrast to her singing style, and one much used by the big band singers of the time, it is worth listening to a highly competent and well-orchestrated 1942 recording of We'll Meet Again by Benny Goodman and his orchestra, another well-known dance band of the time. Here, in typical dance band fashion, the vocalist, Peggy Lee, does not start singing until nearly a minute and a half into the track. Then she is required to sing very straight and without the emotional connectivity that is always typically yearned for by listeners in time of war and other forms of national disaster.
Just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away.
Public demand for emotional music can be seen with the type of music that dominated during other periods of adversity. For example, the four-day working week of the early 1970s, or during the Falkland War in 1982. And most significantly, the way that Elton John's Candle in the Wind empathised with the outpouring of grief following the death of Princess Diana in 1997.
Goodbye, England's rose. May you ever grow in our hearts. You are the grace that placed yourselves where lives were torn apart. Called out to our country, and you whispered to those in pain, now you belong to heaven, and the stars spell out your name. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. And your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will.
However, in the early 1940s, the BBC did not really understand or appreciate this dynamic. They believed that they should be playing upbeat, stirring music in programmes like Workers' Playtime, which they thought would be good for lifting people's spirits, rather than the more emotional variety provided by Vera Lynn that the nation actually craved. A similar situation was occurring in Germany, where the Nazis thought that upbeat marching music was what people should be listening to. But they too were forced to relent to public demand over particularly the song Lili Marleen.
Underneath the lantern by the barricade, darling, I remember the way you used to wait. Was there that you whispered tenderly that you loved me, you'd always be my lily of the lamplight, my own Lily Marleen.
This song is interesting because it was the only song during the war to be a hit on both sides of the military divide. The lyrics were originally written in 1915 as a poem about his girlfriend by a schoolteacher from Hamburg who had been conscripted into the Imperial German Army. It was not until the late 1930s, when Lal Anderson, a German cabaret singer working in Berlin, met Norbert Schultz, that the poem was put to music. She recorded the resultant song under the title The Girl Under the Lantern. But she had to wait a few years, until 1941, for it to become a hit when Belgrade Soldiers Radio, the radio station of the German armed forces in occupied Yugoslavia, started to broadcast to Axis troops in the Balkans, Greece, southern Russia, and North Africa. Lily Marley, as it quickly became known, suddenly became immensely popular with German soldiers at the front. Additionally, it was heard by Allied troops, particularly in North Africa, who were also enchanted by the song, resulting in Vera Lynn making this English language version.
My lily of the lamplight, my own Lily Marley.
By this time, Vera Lynn was mastering radio simultaneous ability for individual and mass appeal. As the Blitz hit Britain in 1940, Vera Lynn became increasingly in demand on the BBC programme Starlight. This was a 15-minute show that featured a singer in an intimate setting. These programmes were broadcast live from the famous Criterion Theatre in the heart of London, where performances carried on regardless of the Blitz. These appearances led to a show that would forever cement her reputation with British servicemen around the world. It was called Sincerely Yours, Vera Lynn.
A letter from home to the forces from Vera Lynn and Fred Hartley.
Just keep on wishing, and care will go.
To our men in uniform from the girls at home. A personal letter in words and music, and the signature is
Sincerely Yours, Vera Lynn.
With Fred Hartley and his music, presented by Howard Thomas.
This radio show was an instant success, not only in Britain, but on every worldwide battleground the BBC reached via shortwave radio. Vera Lynn sent messages to troops far from home, interspersed with her live performances of the songs that became symbolic for the British during the Second World War. It was presented in the form of a letter from her to the troops, who were stationed on active service, largely overseas. Sincerely Yours was a massive hit. The troops loved the programme, and they loved her. Throughout its first run, from the autumn of 1941 to the spring of 1942, the programme attracted over 2,000 requests every week. Her voice plucked at the heartstrings of the soldiers, the sailors, and the airmen, who she called dear boys. The programme also attracted a domestic audience on the BBC's homeroom entertainment station, the Forces programme. It is estimated that more than 20% of the entire British home population tuned in every week. Her radio show became an invaluable communication for women in Britain, who would, for example, write to Vera to announce to their husbands overseas the safe birth of a child. She said about the programme, "I was the link, the point of my most intimate contact with the people. When I sang for the boys, I felt as though I was a sort of in-between. And I sang to her from him, and telling the one what the other wanted to say.
Dear boys, I've been working in the West End all this week, and using the tubes and buses a lot. I realised how well some of the girls are doing your job while you're away. You'll hear from me again next week. Good night, boys. Sincerely yours, Vera Lynn.
We'll meet again. Don't know when. Don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day."
every show ended with the song, We'll Meet Again, with Vera Lynn singing live, diving straight into the chorus with the words, Keep smiling through, just like you always do, conveying everyone's emotions. However, with criticism from some quarters of her crooning style and the sentimental content of the programme, the BBC buckled under the pressure. Sincerely Yours was rested in the spring of 1942, with a critic in the Variety magazine writing, The programme drips with sentiment. It apparently dripped so much it was dropped. Shortly afterwards, the BBC announced a universal crooner ban, tasking its new Dance Music Policy Committee with keeping spirits up and keeping slush off the airwaves. Now the BBC relied upon songs like We're Going to Hang Out the Washing on the Siegfried Line.
Mother dear, I'm riding you from somewhere in France, hoping this finds you well. Sergeant says I'm doing fine, a soldier and a half. Here's a song that we'll all sing, it'll make you laugh. We're gonna hang out the washing on the Siegfried Line. Have you any dirty washing, mother dear? We're gonna hang out the washing on the Siegfried Line, 'cause the washing day is here. Whether the weather may be wet or fine, we'll just rub along without a care. We're gonna hang out the washing on the Siegfried Line, if the Siegfried Line's still there. We're gonna hang out the
They also relied increasingly upon pre-war favourites like George Formby, here singing about the Maginot Line.
You should see me out in France, wearing my tin hat. Mid-shot and shell, it's worse than, well, it's even worse than that. Now imagine me in the Maginot Line, sitting on a mine in the Maginot Line. Now it's turned out nice again, the army life is fine. French girls make a fuss of me, I'm not French if you can see. But I know what they mean when they say wee wee, down on the Maginot Line. Now imagine me in the Maginot Line.
And even Gracie Fields, a northern lass, who here rather uncharacteristically sings a traditional Cockney song, Doing the Lambeth Walk.
Everything free and easy, to end your darn well breezy. Why don't you make your way there?
Go there, baby.
Once you get down Lambeth Way, every evening, every day, you'll find yourself doing the Lambeth Walk. Hey!
Every day, the BBC's radio output revolved around programmes like Workers' Playtime.
This is the BBC Home Service.
This was a twice daily, half-hour music programme meant specially for factory workers, to lift up their spirits and encourage them in their war effort. And then there was Itmar.
Here we are with the home fleet, and it's that man again.
It's the man again, it's the man again, it's the zombie and the Indian.
Pulsating with perpicacity, perpetuating pusillanimous prevarication, precisely producing paradox of hippie, well, forevermore.
Private boy, we command the boy, our youth must go on the way. When trouble's brewing, it's been doing a man, and then again.
But Vera Lynn's popularity endured, despite the BBC's efforts. With memories of the Battle of Britain and the Blitz fresh in everybody's mind, Vera Lynn released her next massive hit, The White Cliffs of Dover, in 1942. This song, recorded this time with a full orchestra, evoked images of brave Spitfire and Hurricane pilots defending Britain's coastline against the Luftwaffe.
There'll be
just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after. Tomorrow, when the world is free, the shepherd will tend his sheep, the valley will bloom again, and Jimmy will go to sleep in his own little room again. There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover.
Throughout the war, she toured the country to help keep up morale of servicemen, factory workers, and the home population. She went overseas to Egypt, India, and Burma as part of the Entertainment's National Service Association, giving outdoor concerts for the troops, always in demand with the songs with which she was most associated. We'll meet again, the white cliffs of Dover, there'll always be an England, and a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square.
There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow, just you wait and see.
''1943 saw American servicemen starting to arrive in Britain in preparation for D-Day. The Americans were somewhat underwhelmed by the BBC's radio output. General Eisenhower personally brought pressure to bear upon the BBC, who now found themselves having to bend to their audience's demands rather than relying on their more accustomed Auntie Knows Best attitude. The top-rated Bob Hope Show was heard on British radio for the first time, and more emotive music returned to the airwaves with the likes of Glenn Miller. And the BBC also brought back Sincerely Yours, bowing to a tide of popular demand. As the war in Europe began to wind down, the war in the Far East was still in the balance. Even though much of Vera Lynn's popularity had emanated from the troops in the 8th Army in Egypt, it was her tour of Burma which would generate for her the greatest amount of respect. Visiting the troops on the front line, she woke one morning to see four Japanese fighters just outside her hut. "I wasn't afraid," she recalled. "I always knew I was being very well looked after by the boys. They never left my side." Her courage and kindness helped to inspire battle-weary British troops in Burma, who called themselves the Forgotten Army, fighting a lonely war against the Japanese. As many of them remarked, she made us feel that home was not so far away. She has, ever after, been associated with the men of the British 14th Army.
That certain night, the night we met, there was magic abroad in the air. There were angels dining at the Ritz. nightingale sang in Berkeley Square.
After the war, her popularity continued with radio and television appearances in the UK and the USA. She continued to have hit records with O V de Zane's Sweetheart, a hit on both sides of the Atlantic, making her the first British performer to reach the top spot in America. Later, My Son, My Son reached number one in the UK. Her final single, I Love This Land, was released at the end of the Falklands War in 1982. Then, in 2009, at the age of 92, she became the oldest living artist to top the UK albums chart with We'll Meet Again, The Very Best of Vera Lynn. She released the album Vera Lynn 100 in 2017 to commemorate her 100th birthday, reaching number 3 in the UK charts. This makes her the oldest recording artist in the world and the first centenarian to have an album in the charts. Still much loved by the British nation in the year 2000, she was named the Briton who best exemplified the spirit of the 20th century. Vera Lynn may have set out to be a singer and an entertainer, but she became the heartbeat of a nation during 6 long years of war. The work that she did for the British people was so important to their lives that she has always been greatly appreciated by her country folk, both past and present. Her enduring popularity comes from her performances of the songs that she sang during the Second World War. Her most popular song, We'll Meet Again, has now become a British anthem. As a singer, a broadcaster, and an entertainer, she embodied the stoicism of the British people at a vital point in history. She provided them with warmth, camaraderie, and emotional succor at a time when it was most needed emotionally, and in ensuring that the country pulled together.